Welcome to the Good Old Days of Radio Show. We are head first plunging in to an in-depth study of famous novelist and short story writer Cornell Woolrich, who has been described by somebody not too long ago as the Edgar Allan Poe of the 1940s. And we have Dr. Joe Webb back with us again, who is a fountain of knowledge of things related to the show Suspense, and a byproduct of that becomes all about how these Cornell Woolrich stories got to be heard by how many listeners did Suspense have at this time? I don't mean to throw you a question there, but that's a curve. Well, okay. I've seen some of the Hooper ratings, and they were in excess of 20 million.
Yes, they were.
Now
they were, and considering that the U.S. population was barely over 100 million at that time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
But now I want to just digress here a minute before we get into this and have you think about what I just said. 20 million plus people listened to Suspense in 1947. 20 mm-hmm. million. How many yes. people do they get watching The Tonight Show or any of the current semi-popular shows on television? They do not get anywhere near 20 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of it is that there were very few stations compared to the kind of, you know, when Bruce Springsteen had that song, 57 channels and nothing to watch. I mean, what is it now? It's like 570 stations and nothing to watch.
But the point is that I'm trying to bring here is the country was united, so to speak, behind network radio in a way.
This was appointment radio.
Yeah.
Like so much of the schedule. I mean, for Lux Radio Theater, for Jack Benny, for Phil McGee and Molly, and for Mr. District Attorney, which, believe it or not, sometimes had better ratings than Suspense.
Okay.
This was just these were powerhouses of media.
And imagine
the audiences were wild.
Imagine the potential sponsorship and what a sponsorship of a show that had 20 million listeners, what kind of dollars that could involve. We have digressed or devolved way down with the number of listeners, the impact of a sponsor. Everything has just like deteriorated and, as my friend or somebody might say, just gone to hell in a handbasket. It's a whole different world out there. But that's why we're here. That's why we're here on the Good Old Days of Radio Show, to take you back to those days when radio ruled the airwaves in a way that nothing rules the airwaves now. No radio, no television, no nothing. Okay,
yes.
I've digressed. Today's show, you take ballistics. Now, for those of you who heard my comments last week and said, what in the world is ballistics? Well, you obviously don't have any connection to the world of crime or crime solving or police or FBI or any of that. You don't know what the word ballistic means. So this show is going to tell you in great detail what ballistics are and why they should be relied on, and then twist it a little bit. So anyway, that's my opinion of it. Dr. Joe Webb, what do you have to say?
The original story had this title, was published in January 1938 in Double Detective magazine, and it set a stage or set a process up for police procedurals on radio. I mean, we did always have police stories. We had gangbusters and stuff like that, but this has a slightly different feel for it, and it makes you wonder, because Jack Webb is in the cast, no relation to me. He plays a criminal, by the way, which is a little confusing for us who've heard Dragnet, of course.
Yeah, to hear that voice coming out of a criminal's role.
Yes,
out of
an interrogation room
is
from
a
the
little
wrong
bit,
side of the table.
It's a little bit discouraging. Like, wait a minute, who's interviewing who here? But okay.
Yes. But this story, the way it's set up, is quite interesting when you think about it from that regard. The star is Howard Da Silva, who is a very big Broadway star. He didn't do all that much radio. It does have a Dragnet feel, but you got somebody with a very cultured voice in the police part, even though he's a tough cop. There's this belief that Jimmy Stewart was originally cast for this part, and I don't know if that would have really worked. I mean, Stewart was a very good radio actor. The story would have been a little bit different had he done it, but De Silva is very, very good in the role here. And it's a good story. You don't get the sense that Woolridge takes the side of the police all that often in his stories. He's more interested in the person who's a potential victim where everything's gone wrong. There's no hope for them. But this is from the other side of the table, so to speak. It's a compelling story, and if it did play a role in Jack Webb formulating the idea for Dragnet, all the more interesting.
Well, of course, he did Pat Novak for Hire first, but he still could have had this germinating.
Yeah, but Pat was a smart alecky detective guy.
Yeah, but still, he could have had this germinating in the back of his head, and then all of a sudden,
absolutely,
it became Dragnet.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good theory. I don't know if we'll ever know that because Jack Webb isn't here to tell us, but...
Exactly.
Okay. Anything else before we roll into it?
No, let's dig in.
Okay. From March 13th, 1947, CBS Radio Network, the show Suspense, You Take Ballistics, starring Howard De Silva and Jack Webb.
Yes, Roma wines taste better. Because only Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. Roma Wines present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Howard De Silva in You Take Ballistics, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you...
Howard De Silva as Homicide Lieutenant Ed Harvey in You Take Ballistics. Cornell Woolrich's remarkable study of the police mind at work, which is tonight's tale of suspense.
By this time, it was night, pretty late. I walked down toward the apartment on the opposite side of the street like I had a dozen times before that day. This time, I had to count the doorways. I knew Cass was on the 10th one down from the corner. I knew he was there, but I knew I'd never see him. It was too dark, and Cass was a lot too smart.
Hi, Lieutenant.
He made any moves yet?
Not a move.
How about the back way?
No. Peters is covering that. He'd leave us now. Anyway, you know he's still up there. Every little while, you can see his shadow against the shade. There, see?
Huh.
Hey, look.
You got a match?
Oh, sure, here. Hey, Lieutenant, did you get any orders or did we just stick around? Myself, I think he's settling down for the night.
No. Mm-mm. This isn't getting us anyplace. I'm going to make the pinch. Now, come on up with me, see what we got.
Sure. Oh, boy, it's good to stretch. My gams were killing me.
Yeah, I know. I've done plenty of stakeouts myself. Anyway, it was warm tonight. That's a help.
Yeah, that's always a help. Hey, you know what I think, Lieutenant?
What?
I think that guy's waiting for something.
Or someone.
Like who?
Us.
He's wise, huh?
Smart, pretty smart. I don't like it. Mm.
Yes, sir, gents.
Coleman, Clarence Coleman, take us up.
Yes, sir.
I need a shave.
Huh? Nah, you don't look bad.
How long has he been living here? You, how long has Coleman been living here?
Huh? Oh, Mr. Coleman? 2 or 3 years. Second door
to your...
We know
the way. What a dump, huh?
Hey,
No.
Lieutenant,
no,
you
no.
think I...
No. No gun. He won't give us any trouble. He's too smart. Your name, Coleman?
Yeah.
We're from headquarters.
Okay. You want to come in or you just want to talk to me where you are?
We want to talk to you downtown, but first we want to come in.
Come on in. Nobody's stopping you.
Look around, Cat.
Yeah. Suppose you guys got a search warrant?
I suppose you got a witness that we don't.
Go ahead, look. I just want you to know I'm not dumb, that's all.
Sure, I know. You're smart.
I was doing a crossword puzzle. You don't mind, do you?
Well, go right ahead.
I want to get that one down before I forgot.
Crash, you find it?
No.
Do you own a gun?
Why, sure.
Where is it?
Tell them to look in the bottom drawer of the bureau, and they're under my winter underwear.
Did you hear that, Cass?
Yeah.
I got a license for it, too.
You fired it lately?
Yeah, sure thing.
I got it. Here she is, Lieutenant.
Look out, you don't rub off any prints.
I told you we're smart.
Maybe too smart.
38, one shell gun. When'd you fire it last?
Right last night. Why should I lie to you? You're going to give me the nitrate test as soon as you get me downtown anyway.
Right last night, huh? Right into Edmund Lombard's body?
Wrong. Into the floor. Here.
You got all the answers, haven't you?
I only know what I know. Can't do better than that for my own brother.
If you fired it into the floor, where's the crease?
See that little scatter rug?
Huh?
Just kick it aside. See it? I can do better than a crease. If you dig in with your penknife, you can probably get the slug.
Well, let's have a look.
Hey, what are you doing that for, Cass? This guy's just making a chump out of you.
Maybe, but we better have the slug just the same, Lieutenant.
All right. You, take your hands out of your pockets and get your favorite hat and stop moving toward the door. You're coming with us.
There we are.
Okay by me.
You get it?
Yeah, it's a 38, all right.
Am I under arrest?
Well, if you got to have a name for it, no. Not yet. You're just a guest of the department for the rest of the night.
And get the works, I suppose.
Cass, take him down the stairs, will you? I want to talk to this kid on the elevator for a minute.
All right.
Hey, wait a second. You got any more of that gum?
Yeah, here. Sure, Lieutenant. There you are. Come on, you.
All right. Oh,
come on. Come on. Let's go down here. Yes, sir.
Got a match?
Oh, sure, I have.
A gun go off anywhere in this building last night?
Sure, his did.
Who's Coleman's?
Yeah, the people downstairs telephoned me, so I had to go up there. He fired into the floor by mistake. He was plenty scared. Hey, he in trouble?
Nothing serious, just a little thing called murder.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Howard Da Silva in You Take Ballistics. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Next time you buy wine, remember this. For entertaining, for everyday pleasure, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine. That's because Roma wine tastes better, yet costs so little. Yes, in Roma wine, you enjoy an important difference, an extra goodness in fuller bouquet, richer body, and better taste. To bring you this difference, this better taste, Roma starts with California's choicest grapes, then Roma Master Vintners, with America's finest winemaking resources, guide this grape treasure unhurriedly to tempting taste perfection. Later, along with Roma wines of years before, these choice cuvées await selection from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines for your pleasure. Tomorrow, enjoy the better taste of Roma California wines. Whether you prefer sherry or port, muscatel or Tokay, insist on Roma wines, your best buy in good taste. Remember, R-O-M-A, Roma, the greatest name in wine.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Howard Da Silva as Homicide Lieutenant Ed Harvey in You Take Ballistics, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I've been on the force for quite a while, and I made my shares of arrests, big and small. Little punks and chiselers and big-time racket men and crazy, wild-eyed killers. I never made a pinch that looked better and that I liked less than this Coleman. We had everything. We had to make the pinch. And I knew it was going to turn sour the minute I walked into that apartment. And a sour murder rap is something, well, I personally don't care for. We didn't take him downtown. We took him over to a little precinct house up on the west side. And we didn't book him. We just tossed him in the back room and let him wait. Leffinger, my boss, got there about 10 minutes later.
Did you bring him in?
Yes, sir, he's in back. Here's his gun. He claims it went off into the floor last night by mistake.
Oh, beat us to the paraffin test, huh? Well, he could have framed it that way after he killed Lombard.
Yeah, he could have.
Here's a slug, Captain.
38.
Yeah.
Turn the stuff over to ballistics.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Cass.
Huh?
Give me a light, will you?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Any report on the one they dug out of Lombard?
Probably on its way now. Who are these two guys?
The night elevator man that took them up to Lombard's apartment and the night counter man at a lunchroom about a half a block away.
They recognize him?
Positive.
Well, let's go to work. Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
We'll want to spring these witnesses on them. One buzz, send in the elevator man. Two buzzes the other guy.
Okay, Captain.
You think he'll sweat?
You?
No. Hi, Coleman. Sit over there.
Sure.
Put the light on him, O'Farrell.
Yes, sir.
All right, Coleman. Suppose you tell us what you did last night.
Beginning when?
Beginning when you left your apartment.
Well, I went out about 9 o'clock. Walked over to 23rd and 7th. There's a cigar store there. I made a phone call.
Who to?
Edmund Lombard.
Oh, so you did contact Lombard?
Sure. Did I say different?
Go ahead.
You know Lombard's racket?
You tell us.
Collected bets on the nags. Only the long shots he wouldn't turn in. They never came in anyway, so who knows the difference? Only this one time, I get a tip on one that comes in. 20-1. Lombard can't cover. He lambs. I just catch up with him last night. On the phone, I tell him I want my dough. I tell him to meet me in an hour.
Did he meet you?
I didn't give him a chance. I went up to his place.
You went up to his place?
Sure. There's no percentage for me to lie. I know you got me placed up there.
So you went up to his place?
Yeah. He was already packing, getting ready to lamb again. He kind of laughed and said, you can't blame a guy for trying. I said, I want my $2,000. Okay, he said, you win. He asked me for a receipt so I can't come at him again. Fair enough. So I write one out for him on the hotel stationery.
We'll wind it up. Let's hear how good you can make it.
That's all. So he begins unpacking. He figures he might just as well stay where he is now. Then I leave.
Hmm. So that's how it was. Sure you didn't leave out anything?
No.
Why'd you leave out about killing him?
Because it belongs out, because I didn't.
You didn't have a gun on you when you went up there.
Oh, yeah. Sure I did.
Why'd you take a gun if you didn't plan to shoot him?
So he wouldn't pull one on me. You think a guy like Eddie Lombard's going to cough up $2,000 just like that?
Boss, don't lie to us. When we bring you in here, we want the truth. You shot him first and collected your dough afterwards.
No.
And then you wrote out your receipt to a dead man.
No.
That's how it happened, isn't it?
No.
Answer me, isn't it?
No. No.
Cass.
Yeah, Captain.
Never mind those witnesses. He spiked them for us. Come on in here and give us a hand.
Sure.
Okay, bring him out of it.
All right, come on. Come on, will you? Get up there.
Why don't we give you something to pass out about?
Now, why'd you tell him? You listening? Why'd you tell the night man that Lombard was staying and not to bother about his luggage?
Because I was afraid he'd go up there and Lombard might think it was me again and take a shot at him.
Because he was dead in there and you wanted to get clear of the building before he was found.
If I did, I didn't go very far. I stayed in the coffee shop down the block for 15 or 20 minutes afterward.
Look, what'd you do with the money you took off him after you killed him?
The dough he gave me. I put it in the bank the first thing this morning.
Take over, Cass.
All right.
Come on, Harvey.
No, no. Wait till I wash my hands. You know, I need a shave. All right.
Come on, come on.
See you later, Cass.
Yeah, Lieutenant. All right, Coleman, come on now. Why don't you...
You know, if I'd hang around there much longer, I'd be liable to hurt him.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. How come nobody heard the shot?
People next door were out, and down below they were asleep.
You know, I don't like it. You notice how he beats us to the punch every time. We got witnesses for everything, except the killer.
Which all adds up, though. We got nothing but circumstantial. Wouldn't stand up in court 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, maybe ballistics will tie it up for us.
Yeah, maybe.
What's the matter? Don't you believe in ballistics?
Sure, but you heard the guy. He's got every other angle covered. Not going to slip up on anything as obvious as ballistics.
Don't you think he's guilty?
I think he's guilty. I went back up to Coleman's apartment. I hate this part of any job. There's always the off chance that it may turn up something, so it has to be done. But 9 times out of 10, it doesn't get you a thing. Didn't this time either. Just a lot of junk. In the living room, items, crossword puzzle he'd been working on, the pencil stub, the butt of the cigarette he'd been smoking, and the package it came out of. The bathroom, items, usual assorted stuff in the medicine cabinet, and 15 rusty razor blades under the bathtub. Kitchen, items, 3 empty beer bottles and some very lively cockroaches of assorted sizes. The bedroom, items, a bureau full of linen and 3 suits in the closet. One of them was the grain number he'd been wearing the night he called on Lombard. There was nothing in the pockets but a Canadian dime, a faded snapshot of a faded blonde, and a book of cigarette papers. I put the stuff from his pockets in a regulation brown envelope for no very good reason. Went back to the precinct. Effinger was still there, biting his nails.
Did you get anything?
If I did, I don't know it. How's he doing?
How's he doing? How are we doing? Lousy.
Yeah, so far.
You're still sure of him, huh?
I was never sure of a pinch in my life.
Listen, I'm going to let it go through on circumstantial. Ballistics will be sure to match his gun to the slug that killed Lombard, and that's enough to do it without anything else.
I don't know.
Say, what are you... Yeah? Yeah, this is Leffinger. Well, it's about time. Well, you knew where to reach me. I told you I was going to bring him out here. Yeah? What? Yeah. Okay. Ballistics. Coleman's gun was a .38.
I know that.
Oh, you know that. Well, then maybe you know that the slug they took out of Lombard is a .32. So now what do you know?
That does it.
Yeah, it does it, all right.
No, I don't mean that. I mean he's our meat. He's the guy. You can't tell me different.
I'm not telling you different, but ballistics is. And ballistics don't lie. You setting yourself up above ballistics?
You take ballistics, I'll take human nature. That don't lie either.
If you mean he did it with a .32 and then ditched it, you're wrong, because we checked all that.
I know. I know he didn't. Otherwise, he wouldn't have shot that slug into the floor.
But the slug in the floor was a .38.
Listen, Cap, I've called on aldermen, yeah, and state representatives, and... Well, even they get a little scared when you say headquarters. But not this guy. He was waiting for us. He was calm. He was doing crossword puzzles. He was too calm. No, he's too smart. He's got everything covered. He's been ahead of us all the way. He's our guy, I tell you. He's our guy.
He's our guy. He's our guy. Well, go on out and prove it, then.
All right, don't take it out on me, Cap. I feel as bad about it as you do.
Yeah, well, you're the guy with all the big ideas. Go out and do something about it.
All right, how long will you give me?
Tomorrow morning. You can't hold him forever without booking him, you know.
Tomorrow morning? What am I going to do at this time? Look, make it noon, huh? Give me a chance, anyhow.
All right. Noon. And I'm stretching it for you.
Yeah, thanks, Cap.
Listen, wait a minute. You're not holding out on me, are you?
I wish I was. I don't know a thing more than you do, Cap. I just know it's got to be our way, that's all.
Yeah, got to be.
Hey, I think I'll take another look at it before I go.
Oh, now listen, Carl. We know you did it. Why don't you make it easy for yourself?
Make it easy for you coppers, you mean? I know you guys. Anything for a pinch. What do you care if you got the wrong guy?
All right.
Okay, Cass. You can lay off.
You got something?
Yeah, the slug that killed Lombard was a 32. His gun is a 38.
Huh?
All right, throw him in a cell. We'll probably have to turn him loose in the morning.
Morning? What's the matter with tonight?
What's the matter? Don't you like it here?
All right. But you'll have a sweet case of false arrest on your hands by morning. Remember that, copper, when you're back pounding a beat.
Oh, I won't forget. You're smart. Got a match? Go on, have a cigarette.
I got my own.
Go ahead, have one.
I wouldn't take a smoke from a copper if it was the last one before I die.
You may have a chance to prove that someday.
Yeah?
Yeah, when you go to the electric chair. Well, that sounded good, but I wasn't too sure. You know, they say every criminal makes at least one mistake. Well, I wasn't too sure of that either. All I was sure of was that he'd done it, so there had to be some way to prove it. Well, first, I went back to his apartment. I went over the joint with a fine-tooth comb. Nothing. Then I thought of that suit in the closet. I got it out, I went over it inch by inch. Turned the pockets inside out. Right there was where I found something that gave me an idea, or rather, it was what I didn't find that I should have. I went out to Coleman's kitchen, I made a pot of black coffee, and I sat down to think. And the more I thought, the better I liked it. It might not mean a thing, it might not even be possible, but it was all I had, so... So the next stop was headquarters and the pistol range in the basement. And by the time I got through, it was daylight. At 6:45, I was waiting outside that cigar store at 23rd and 7th where Coleman had made his phone call to Lombard. It was run by a little guy named Truhoff. We questioned him before, but this was different. The story wasn't open yet, but finally, after what seemed at least an hour and a half, I saw him. I saw Truhoff come puffing down the street.
Well, Lieutenant, you're the real early bird, huh?
You're late.
Late, he says. What time you want a cigar store should open? The middle of the night.
Come on,
huh?
Come on, let's go inside. I want to ask you a couple of things.
Ah, more questions. Didn't you ask me already everything but my grandmother's middle name?
Yeah, I forgot that. That's why I came back.
All right. So now what?
About this Coleman. When he was in here...
Sure. He telephoned from the booth back there. Now, how can I hear what he says from way up here?
No, I don't care about that now. He used to buy his smokes from you, though, you said.
That's right. Every day, almost.
Any particular brand?
Sure. Always the same for 2 years. These here.
Always machine-made cigarettes?
Always. Why not?
What did he buy from you the night he was in here phoning?
The same. Why not?
You're sure he didn't buy these?
Wait. Yes. If I didn't see them in your hand, I would never remember. Cigarette papers. For change, he said, to cut down expenses, he said. It was the first time he ever bought them.
Did he buy any loose tobacco to go with them?
Let me see. Why? I think he didn't ask me, so I figured he's got some already.
Okay. You can give me some now.
Oh, sure thing.
Hey, give me some matches, will you?
Sure. Help yourself. Say, what is it all of a sudden with you, Lieutenant? You look like you just swallowed the cat that ate the canary.
You're all right, Pop. And I'm going to fix you up.
Yeah?
Yep. To be a witness at a nice big murder trial. Free. I went back to the precinct, but Leffinger had moved him to another one over on the east side on account of the 24-hour detention law. That took more time to locate him, but that was one thing I had plenty of now. I was either in with what I had, or I was out. And suddenly I felt tired. I felt tired as an old dog. I tried breakfast, but that didn't help much, so I went on over to the east side. Leffinger was right on deck, cranky as ever, but I could see he was worried. We'd had this guy pretty nearly 48 hours, and the cops don't like to break the law any more than the next guy.
Well, where you been all night, Bright Eyes? You look like you slept on a park bench.
I didn't sleep any place. I've been using my brains. Why didn't you leave word you were going to move him?
What's the difference? His next move is out.
His next move is a Raymond after what I'm going to show you.
Great. Great. I'm just in the mood for lantern slides.
Let's have him in, huh?
Yeah, bring him in, Johnson.
Okay, Captain.
Now, look, first I want you to watch how he rolls a cigarette.
What are we doing now, playing parlor games?
Just watch him, that's all. And remember, I found these cigarette papers in the pocket of his suit. The suit he wore the night he went to see Lombard.
Oh, I suppose he gassed him to death with cheap tobacco.
Here he is, Captain.
Oh, the Rover boys. You guys woke me up just to move me to another hideout. Why don't you get wise to yourselves? You know you're going to have to book me or turn me loose sooner or later.
All right. Forget it. We're turning you loose. All we want you to do is to sign a waiver that nothing happened to you in here.
Nuts, I sign nothing.
Hey, take it easy, will you? We got the guy that did it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Got nothing to worry about. We just don't want any suits for false arrest, that's all.
Yeah, well, you took the words right out of my mouth, Copper, because my first stop after here is a lawyer.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's talk this over. Smoke?
Not one of them things.
Will you smoke these, don't you?
Yeah, sure.
Here's some tobacco. Go ahead, roll one.
Thanks.
That's not the way.
I'm a little out of practice.
A little out of practice, he says. Don't look to me like he'd ever roll one before in his life. Is it to you, Cap?
All right, so send me to the chair for that.
Just the same, he bought these cigarette papers the night he went to see Lombard at the cigar store where he phoned, where he bought all his smokes. First time in 2 years he ever bought any. And no tobacco to go with him. And not a shred of loose tobacco in any of his pockets. Now, why do you suppose he bought those cigarette papers that night, huh?
You're telling it. I'm listening.
Are you listening, Coleman?
You're talking in your sleep.
I'll tell you why he bought them. Better than that, I'll show you why. Let me have your gun a minute, will you, Cap?
Yeah, sure.
That's a 38, right?
Yeah.
Same caliber as Coleman's gun?
Right.
All right. Now, here's a 32 caliber bullet. The same caliber as the slug that killed Lombard. Do you want to see it?
I know a 32 when I see it.
All right. Now, we take the 38 bullets out of your gun. Now, we take this 32 bullet and about three of these cigarette papers. We double them over. We wrap them around the bullet. See? See how snug the 32 fits in your 38 gun now?
Well, I'll be a monkey.
Now watch. Now watch how a 38 gun will fire a 32 bullet. I'll put it in the baseboard over there. That's ballistics, Cap. How do you like it?
Ballistics. Ballistics?
You take ballistics. I'll take human nature every time. Three months later, Coleman went to the chair. Whether he took a cigarette from a copper or not before he died, I don't know. And I don't care.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. Roma, America's favorite wines. This is Truman Bradley, bringing back to our microphone the star of tonight's suspense play, Howard Da Silva. My compliments, Howard, on a grand performance. Say, tell me, how did you like being on the side of law and order for a change? On the screen, I've seen you as a pretty tough character.
Truman, I much prefer to be law-abiding. It makes me more popular with my friends.
Well, here's something, Howard, that will make you even more popular with your guests. A gift basket of Roma wines from Roma, your host of the evening.
My thanks to Roma, Truman. This is my idea of real hospitality.
That's what your friends will say, Howard, when you treat them to the golden, amber, fragrant Roma California sherry in your gift basket. For Roma sherry, with its tempting nut-like taste, is the perfect first call for dinner and served with nuts, fruit, cake, or any tasty snack. Roma sherry is a truly delightful wine for entertaining any time.
Right, Truman. Roma sherry is certainly a versatile wine.
Versatile is the word for Roma sherry, Howard. And extra good, too. For Roma sherry, like all Roma wines, gives you an important difference, an extra goodness in fuller bouquet, richer body, and better taste. And the best proof I can give you that Roma wines taste better is the fact that more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
Well, that's proof enough for me, Truman. And now who's on suspense next week?
Well, Howard, it's Claude Rains.
My favorite actor.
Yes, Claude Rains in a very unusual suspense story. Mr. Rains will be entirely alone, no other member of the cast.
a real solo performance. The story will be a famous English study in terror, The Waxwork. And you'll want to hear what it feels like to spend the night in a museum haunted by the spirits of famous murderers of the past.
That I've got to listen to. Thank you and good night.
Howard Da Silva appeared through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and is currently being seen in their production Blaze of Noon. Tonight's suspense play was written by Robert Richards from the story by Cornell Woolrich. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Mr. Claude Rains as star of Suspense.
Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Buy your share of Easter happiness. Bring new life and hope to crippled children through Easter Seals. Buy Easter Seals today. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, that's an interesting story. My take on it is, I'll sum this up as to what I thought when I heard this show. You are supposed to, you have been trained to, and you've been told to trust the science. And that's what they're trying to get across here. But they're also trying to get across the idea that there's a human element, and sometimes the science may tell you one thing, but human nature tells you something else. And I found that to be the most fascinating aspect of this one.
Well, forensics were still fairly new here, and only organizations like the FBI had access to the latest and greatest technologies for that. So you're seeing the whole idea of forensics start to develop here in this story in the way that Woolrich uses it, for sure.
Yeah, I still like the idea, though.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Trust but verify. Trust the science, but verify.
One curious thing, and this is just a general comment about listening to radio today. You've got Jack Crucian, who is always a great bit player, supporting player in radio. He plays an elevator operator. And there are some stories that we hear on Suspense that rely on technologies like elevators, and no one even knows what an elevator operator is or how they were part of the culture of a building and knew all the people who were working there or living there.
Oh, yes, especially now, if you live in New York City, you still do have elevator operators.
Yes, you do, and some buildings have that as part of the union agreement from years and years ago,
right,
that they could work until it was time to retire, and then they would not be replaced in some buildings.
Right.
Other what do you want to call it? More expensive residences like having the elevator operator because it facilitates the, it makes a lot of the residents happy to have someone help them with their bags and stuff.
Yeah, some of those places still have bathroom attendants too.
So. Yes, they do.
New York is an unusual place to visit. There are still elements of the old days there. Not as many as there used to be, but there's still a few. And elevator operators and bathroom attendants and things like that, they still exist in some places in New York City.
They do. They do.
I have one thing, unless you have something else related to this show, but I have one question for you. So let's see if they have anything else. Oh, you want the question. Okay.
I'll take the question.
End of the show, they say that next week is Claude Rains in The Waxworks. Does that show exist?
It does not.
Aha.
It does not.
Because I heard that and I went, oh, I'd love to hear that. And then I thought through my brain.
There's an interesting, interesting story about that one.
Okay, what is it?
Well, first of all, it's missing, and nobody knows where the network recording is, and an AFRS disc has never shown up. That was supposed to be Alfred Hitchcock. At the end of 1946, there were news stories that Alfred Hitchcock was going to appear on Suspense, and even one that said that he was going to be in that particular script. And from what we've been able to figure out, and I've been noodling this with Keith Scott, who's been on the show many times, and some others, and Don Ramlow and all, that I think they realized that it wouldn't work.
That it wouldn't work with Hitchcock?
With Hitchcock, okay. Yeah. It is a long performance.
Yeah.
It's basically one person one doing
person.
The entire thing.
That's how they described it, yes.
Yes. It kept being delayed, and eventually they wanted to do it, and Claude Rains did it. It was done other times in the series, but that is one that would be really marvelous to get.
Yeah, I wonder. Maybe I shouldn't say this out loud, but I'm going to. I have so many transcription discs here in boxes that I have never looked at, and I know there's a bunch
of suspense.
There's
been rumors of that, and it's about time you admitted that.
Okay. Well, this may give me the excuse to start digging through those boxes, because when I heard that, I went, wow, do I have that somewhere? Yeah.
Well,
and then I went and looked.
Let me know when you do, because I have a list.
I have a list. Okay. Well, a number of them are in boxes where they're cracked glass discs.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to even open the boxes, but as technology continues to improve, and there are now pretty simple ways of transferring broken glass discs. They're expensive, but they get done. The more we get to that, the more tempting it'll be to open those boxes and see what's actually in there. But anyway, I hope I do have it. And if not, I hope somebody has it or somebody finds it, because that just sounds like a really intriguing one that I would love to hear.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I thought you'd know the answer to that, because in my just running through my brain, I'm like, wait, Claude Rains, the Waxworks? Have I ever heard that? No.
Nobody has since it was broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, that brings up a very important point about what we do here. People are only able to hear these programs once. And if they missed it, they missed it. But one of our blessings of having all of these recordings and transcriptions around is not only can you hear the program, but you can hear it again. And again, and look at it from many, many different perspectives. I've come to appreciate the programs more as I study the history of each one of them. And then I go back, and when I listen to them again, it's like I'm listening to them with new ears, you know? So, yes, so everybody would want to hear the Claude Rains Waxworks, but then we would want to hear it again and again and again to get the nuance of the performance.
Yeah, well, here to all of that, and to those folks out there, and I'm one of them, but I don't want to focus on me with this, but to those folks out there who are searching out original transcriptions and seeing what can be found in basements and garages and barns and attics and warehouses and wherever else they turn up, eBay, all over the place.
Yes.
That is a noble thing, because you are preserving history, you are saving history, and most of the so-called archives out there, and I don't want to get too much into this because I get myself in trouble when I do, they mm-hmm. tend to just take things and lock them away and claim copyright issues and claim all kinds of crazy reasons why people can't hear them. And maybe in 50 years when all that is settled and done and it's 100 years from now, we hope somebody yes. will still care. But those of us who do care now and do have the ability to research and find out little tidbits of things like Dr. Joe does, it's a blessing to be able to get access to the programs. It's a blessing to be able to hear them. And it's a blessing for me to be able to present them here on the Good Old Days of Radio show. So
I agree.
That's all I got to say about that. But
yes.
There you go. All right, well, thanks for bringing that up, because I do bring that up every once in a while, but it's not been said enough. And people who just sort of take all this for granted that, oh, you can just go on your computer and type in this and all of a sudden the show appears and all that stuff. None of that would have happened without the efforts for a long time of people from me and people before me and people after me that have spent a great deal of time hunting these things down and making transfers and spending the money it takes to make them sound good and all of that. It would not have happened. You would not be able to do this. It would be just gone. And so
the preservation of radio programs is one of the greatest examples of crowdsourcing. Now, crowdsourcing is a relatively new word, only around like two decades, is the greatest example of crowdsourcing for preservation that I can think of.
Yeah, because otherwise, They would just be locked. Whatever did exist would be locked away somewhere, and nobody would ever hear it. You could never do a show like this. You could never go on your computer and type in anything. It just wouldn't be there. And I don't think enough people who nowadays are collecting this stuff really understand that. I really think they think it just dropped all out of the sky. So,
yes.
Whatever. Okay.
Whatever.
Well, anybody who likes an interesting story about a pyromaniac will be happy to tune in next week.
So, yes, it's a really hot story.
So. A really hot story that will warm the cockles of your heart, as somebody used to say.
Yes.
And then they said, in the world was cockles? Anyway, okay. All right. Until next week, thank you, Dr. Joe Webb, again for your great contribution to the Good Old Days of Radio show and letting us in on all this backstory and inside baseball type stuff. And we will be back next week with yet another great Cornell Woolrich short story adapted for the show Suspense. So until then, this is John Tefteller saying goodbye.